journey with sight loss can be a long one. It certainly shares some common ground with other people, but everybody's journey is unique. But one thing along the line is that we need support at sometimes, and sometimes being registered partially sighted or severely sight impaired gives you the chance of accessing more support. Now, I went along to get my eyes assessed a couple of weeks ago at the hospital with a consultant, and suddenly was told that it's about time that I was severely sight impaired. And actually, it's kind of weird, but it hit me quite hard at the time. I'm joined now by Paul Quigley from Manchester. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Simon. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Did you hear me rambling on there?
Yes, I did. Absolutely. Yes.
It's strange, isn't it? Because you've been dealing with sight loss a lot of your life. But when were you actually registered?
I was registered. Yeah, I was actually registered, believe it or not, about 24 years ago, back in 1995. They used to call it registered blind in those days, didn't they? Do you remember?
Yeah. And it's weird. Whenever I mention, oh, it looks like I'm getting ready, people go, oh, that's good.
Yes, like, it's good.
Right, okay, it's good from what? Well, so, I mean, in fact, you were one of the people who said that to me. So when you said, well, that's good, what did you mean?
That's good. No, it's good. Not that it in and of itself. It's terrible. Of course it is. As you said, it hits you like a, I think because you're in denial. I mean, I was in denial for years before when I had RP, because I didn't, there was many years before that when my mum used to go, my mother and my brother and sister used to go to eye checkups at Moorfields and Birmingham Eye Hospital down through the decade, you know, from about 1980 onwards, where the consultants were always searching for looking at the retinas, examining them and saying, oh, is that RP or is it just, you know, macular degeneration? And you kind of, you know, you're having these field tests and you're kind of praying upon prayer that it isn't you, that you haven't got this gene and that you've somehow managed to avoid it. And then when the day comes when the consultant sort of looks at you gravely, or not that you can really see him that well, because you normally, when your glasses were off or your contact lenses were out and your eyes were dilated and you couldn't see anything because they're fluorescent strip lights, but that's another story, and you got crushing headaches. But I mean, yeah, and when somebody says, well, you know, well, actually, you know what, Mr. Quigley or Mr. Pawley, you are blind. It's like you've crossed that Rubicon. You know, you're in denial no more. You know, you can be recognized and seen by the world, literally, not or figuratively, as blind. And it's like, oh my God, am I blind? And it's like, yes, you're blind. And it's like, oh, okay. Right. And it's like something you never, because there are these even within the blind community or the visually impaired community, I thought at the time, there were these stereotypes that to be blind, you had to look like Stevie Wonder with a dog guide dog and, you know, and the white cane, you know, and it was all of that stereotype. And you kind of think to yourself, particularly in my case, of course, where you had sight as a young person and not always, you know, it wasn't great having always night blind, but I mean, there was some vision. But as your periphery in RP, that's how it goes for RP people, that it goes little by little. You don't really notice it but until you clank crashing into objects. And of course, then you notice it because you've got a concrete block in your knee or something. But I mean, beyond that, you kind of get to the point where on balance of experience, the experiential life as a person who's constantly colliding with objects, you have to sit down and you think to yourself, I am blind. I'm not just a very, you know, unsighted person who's managing to avoid danger every day. You just sort of thought, yep, that's it, you know, cards on the table time, that is what I am. And then you ask yourself a series of questions about, well, what does this mean? You know, what does it mean? As you said a moment ago, well, what does that mean? What's the difference between where you're not registered blind or severe, as they call it now, severely sight impaired, or just sight impaired or not at all? And it's quite a, I think it's because you have to kind of redefine yourself, Simon, as being somebody who somebody who has a disability rather than the disability having you. And that is the real psychological barrier that you kind of go through or challenge that you face, that you kind of think you have to sort of, what does that mean? And as you said, you know, what are the benefits or lack thereof of being blind? There are many and varied, and, you know, you can qualify for more financial support. Of course, you can from the government through disability entitlements. There's that sort of safety net of finance, which is a fabulous thing. And I'm so grateful to the fact that we do live in an age where there are these sorts of benefits. Of course, up until, you know, 20, 30 years ago, there was no such thing as a DLA. I mean, they didn't exist, and it was dependent upon the state. So, you know, for sort of residential care and remploy and all these other situations that people found themselves in. And of course, their abilities and their talents weren't recognized at all. And at least I think with now, these days, certainly through Henshaw's RNIB and other organizations, you know, of course, there's the Paralympics, that people with disabilities, including sight, vision impairment disabilities, are able to sort of fulfill themselves in a way that they've never been able to before. And with the badge, really, to you know, back up to where you said at the beginning, to say that I am now sight impaired, or a person to say I am actually registered blind, sight impaired, severely sight impaired, you kind of have to, for me, it was a sigh of relief that I kind of was struggling with this state of psychological denial for years and fighting against it, trying to be, air quotes, normal, you know, and that horrible word of normal. There is no such thing as normal, of course, because we all have issues, whether it's psychological. Of course, mental health is in the news all the time now, isn't it? So to have a sensory deprivation, which is getting worse and worse, will never get better, and it's a genetic thing, and there's nothing that, not even so far, stem cell research can rectify, not in my case, not as yet. You just sit down and you just say, okay, this is what I've got to deal with. This is what it is. And you no longer have to adapt yourself to the world in the sense that you don't have to make excuses. You don't have to apologize for it anymore. You just literally have to hold your hands up and say, that's what I am. And thank God for the legislation also that we've got, like the Equalities Act, that basically makes it a level playing field for you and your significant others around you and your carers to get through the world and have a level of expectation that the world has to treat you fairly and equally and with a respect. Now, I think that's the wonderful thing about it, is that you get respect and you can demand respect and you have to expect respect and you have to almost become an evangelist for respecting people, because we all help each other then. And I think that's a great thing, because as you know, we're going through the sort of the early 21st century here, and people are changing the way that they live, the way they work. It's all going online, and this interaction between each other. I was reading an article yesterday, for example, about people who no longer look at each other. And I thought, well, that's great for me, because I can't see them anyway. So, I mean, you know, everyone's sort of poking around on smartphones and, in our case, you know, text-to-speech readers and things. That is how everyone, even when they're sighted, are now living and working, and they're not looking at each other. So it's a really bizarre situation, Simon. I think to be blind now is, if you're going to be blind now, you know, don't be blind a long time ago. So yeah, I'm grateful for the fact there is such a thing as a legal status of being registered blind, and so I think it's a good thing. Good for you if you've been registered, Simon.
Thank you for that, and I'd love to hear from you if you understand where I'm coming from as a bloke. I don't know if it's a bloke thing, but I'm still coming to terms with this. And then there's also the whole thing, I've never used the white cane. I've had a symbol cane. I've never used a white cane, and you know, that's another thing. Now, a lot of you will be thinking, look, just get over it and get on with it. But for me, it's such a major change, and I have my own feelings about white cane use, and I know the use of it. But you're a white cane user, and you get about fantastically, yes, don't you?
Well, you're quite right. I found that when I had the symbol cane, which was before when I still was in a state of denial, the symbol cane, people didn't recognize it. They didn't even know what it was. I think they thought you were like you had a little magic wand and you were waving about and you were a little bit simple. And I just thought it just didn't do it for me at all. So when I got this huge Kendo Nagasaki, huge, great big, you know, 1.5 meter long cane, they thought I was a Kendo warrior, and everyone keeps out my way and people dance over it. They hop, skip and a jump over the damn thing, but they don't get me. That's the main thing. I love it. I think it's fabulous. And, you know, I think all I need, you know, I'm joking now, I was going to say all I need to put is little blade inside it, and ha-ha, I saw. You can edit that bit out.
Or no, can sorry. I?
I hope you do, because I'm only joking. No, I think it's great to have a white cane. Now, for me, I can't live without it, and it's like hanging up your coat and my sunglasses, and I get the kit on and out I go, and the world has to deal with me rather than me dealing with the world. I think it's great. Hopefully, you will get used to it, and you'll actually learn to see it as an augmentation of positiveness rather than a sort of like anyone seeing you any differently. Because I think the thing is about this whole perception of people with disabilities is that it's about you anyway, Simon, and you know, it's your personality and your fabulous, you know, content within your character that is the important thing. It doesn't matter what you're, you know, waggling around you to get from A to B, because that's all it is at the end of the day. It's a method of getting from A to B. Once you're there, you can fold the thing up, put it under your chair, and you know, you're back to being the good old you that you think you may be missing out on or leaving behind. But you're not at all. It's just the way it is. I mean, you imagine if you're in a car crash, you know, God forbid, and you lost the use of your legs, you'd be in a wheelchair or something, or something. So, you know, we're all still the people we are, no matter what comes along. And I think in a way, to lose your eyesight in some ways, it's nowhere near as bad as losing your marbles, you know, when you get older or whatever and get Alzheimer's and these other horrible things that people have to deal with. And the people around them, of course, are severely infected, at least with eyesight issues. So far, it doesn't really affect you, you know, your mental capacity. And to me, that is it. That's who you are. You know, once you lose a sight, whether it's a hearing or, you know, what else do people lose? The hearing, they lose their sight, and they lose their mobility. Those are the main ones. And organ issues, of course, there are. But I mean, with those sorts of things, I think it's something that if you're going to get anything, you know, you could do a lot worse. You know, it's not fun. And of course, you can't see people's faces and colors and all that other good stuff. And for those of the VI people who have never seen those things, you know, that's a different experience, which I can't relate to at all. So people often say, oh, at least you've been able to see Selena once. And, you know, do you know what things are like? Yeah, but I wouldn't say that just because that's the case, that having not been able to see, say, like Stevie Wonder, I think he was a chap who wasn't able ever to see, you know, he's not missing out either. I mean, look at the fabulous talents he got. And of course, there are lots of other people, Ray Charles, and don't know, those old enough to remember Peters and Lee, you know, you can still do things. I'm thinking about musical analogies there, of course, being musical like you and I, that we can still do what we want to do, you know, and still have a quality of life that isn't affected whatsoever by having a sensory deprivation. So I think you'll be fine. You know, I think you'll be fine, Simon. I think you'll love it.
You will. Welcome home. Welcome.
Come on in.
And shut the door. Was that Peters and Lee?
I think it was, yeah. And that low voice, that was the woman. You know that, don't you? He was doing the Bee Gees bit.
Well, thank you. Before you completely lose it, thank you very much for your pep talk. And for those of you who are maybe suffering, for those of you who are maybe sort of dealing with the same thing or contemplating, you know, a change in your level of sight and how it's going to affect you, don't forget you can phone RNIB in 0303 123 9999 if you'd like to perhaps talk to somebody about that. But in the meantime, it's always a pleasure, and it's like riding a big white wave trying to talk to Paul Quigley. You never know when you're going to quite fall off.
We are the Beach Boys of the blind community, aren't we, Simon?
Goodbye.
Bye.